At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Positively Trek. I'm Dan Gunther, and with me, as she always is, for the comic episodes. Yes, that's right. It's another comic episode. We're at the end of August, and we have comics to talk about. So, joining me is the resplendent Brandy Jackala. Brandy, welcome back.
Resplendent? I don't think I could go that far, but thanks.
I'm never sure what adjective is going to come out of my mouth.
Like, resplendent, I never have... is lovely.
Yeah, I think it's apt.
Okay, thanks. I don't feel very resplendent, but if you think I am, then I will rise to the occasion, sir.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think you're there, but you do what you got to do.
Thank you.
Well, like I said, welcome everybody. We are talking about comics this week, and this month there are two new comics that we're going to talk about, and that is Star Trek Lower Decks number 10, and a new series, a new miniseries, Star Trek Strange New Worlds, The Seeds of Salvation number 1, and that's the first in a 5-part miniseries. So, yeah, some interesting stuff to talk about this month. I want to also just talk a little bit about a change in format for these episodes. Sometimes when we're doing the plot summary for the comics, I feel like it goes a little long. It kind of stretches out. And that's not that big a deal when it's, you know, like this month where it's only 2 issues. But I'm looking ahead to September. And next month, you will get 4 new issues that we are going to talk about in an episode. So I'm kind of trying to streamline the format a little bit, which you may not know because I'm babbling on at the moment, but what I plan to do is give kind of a quick plot summary of each issue, and then we kind of will discuss back and forth what we liked, what we didn't like, and little standout things from the issue and our thoughts on it. So how does that sound, Brandy?
Oh, that sounds great, but I want you to, when you do it, I want you to have a sort of Majel Barrett voice saying, "Previously on Positively Trek Comics Edition."
I like that. Well, especially given the beginning of the Lower Decks number 10, which I don't know if I can do Majel Barrett's voice justice. I feel like, I don't know about that. But Lower Decks number 10 starts out with previously on with some, and again we'll talk about the individual parts of that because I do want to talk about that. Yeah, okay. Well, here's the quick, relatively plot summary of Lower Decks number 10. So continuing on from last month's issue, the Ferengi had the Cerritos kind of at a standoff here. It turns out that with interest, calculated by the Ferengi, of course, Tendi owes 621,808 bars of gold-pressed latinum to this Damon Glom, who is threatening the ship. Boimler and Rutherford kind of using some of the Ferengi's logic against them, using the rules of acquisition, specifically never begin a business negotiation on an empty stomach. They kind of are able to delay the Ferengi by hosting this, or by attending this reception that the Ferengi are going to have on their ship. At the reception, they basically say that Tendi has to die to pay off the debt. But Captain Freeman notes that the translation is actually give up her life, not die. So she basically becomes an indentured servant to the Ferengi. And she has to do this on top of her duties aboard the Cerritos. I guess the Ferengi and the Cerritos are just going to hang out together for a while. Not sure how that's going to work in the long run, but okay. But eventually she finds out that Damon Glom's big problem is energy production, and she also discovers that the Gormagander pooter scoots, as she called them in the last episode, the Gormagander waste products, are a huge source of energy, which will solve Damon Glom's needs. And in exchange for canceling her debt, the location of the Gormagander dumping ground, for lack of a better term, is given to Glom.
Toilet.
There you go. The space toilet. The Gormagander space toilet. Yep. That might be the title of the episode. I don't know.
It's a good choice.
It's not
bad. We may say something even more ridiculous after this. You don't know.
I will write it down. So that is this issue in a nutshell. So, Brandy, initial thoughts, I guess. What are some of your initial thoughts about this issue?
Just didn't care for it.
Okay. Okay.
It wasn't my favorite. It wasn't terrible. I'm not saying that it was terrible, mm-hmm. but I thought that I felt like the entire contrived situation was very contrived and ridiculous and not something that Starfleet would ever bow down to. It's just not what they would do. They'd just be like, you're full of crap. Go on. Get out of here. that's the way it would have gone in mm-hmm. reality, but that's not what we do here. So it's not my favorite story. I just feel like the stakes aren't really there.
Yeah.
That there is no real threat here. Yeah. And it's completely unnecessary to make Tendi basically working all the time. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's just, it wasn't my favorite story.
Yeah. I think actually that echoes a lot of what I thought of this one as well, where it actually gave me a bit of a new appreciation for what the writers of Lower Decks are able to do, because I feel like they ride that line. Like, they come right up to it where it's like, well, this is too ridiculous for Starfleet, but they never quite cross it. Like, they come up to that line and still produce a story that, like, yeah, I see this working. It's funny. It's over the top. It's ridiculous, but it's not, you know, too far-fetched that I can't buy into it. This story, yeah, it does a bit of a swan dive over that line, I think, unfortunately.
Jumped the shark. Definitely jumped the shark.
Yeah, exactly. Jumped the Gormagander? I don't know.
Jumped the Gormagander, yeah.
Ooh, yep. Okay. I'm writing that one down, too.
People could take that one of many ways.
Yes. Well, let's talk a little bit, because I think in every issue, even ones that, you know, we feel maybe don't quite make the grade, there are things to like in it. So,
oh, yes.
I'm going to start with the very first page, which I actually really liked, where they did, as you said, the Majel Barrett last time on Star Trek Lower Decks. And yeah, they've got a bit of a summary of the Ferengi situation going on, but it's also interspersed with, randomly, McCoy talking to that alien in Star Trek 3 in the bar. Yes, Genesis, how can you be deaf with ears like that? Okay. And then topping it off with the ultimate cliffhanger in Star Trek, of course, all these years later, Riker saying, Mr. Worf, fire. And now the conclusion. that made me laugh out loud, I will say.
It got
off to a good start.
I was reading through this and I'm like, what? What? Why is Riker in this? And then I'm like, oh, I see. I see what you did there.
Very nice. My next thing is going to be something that I didn't really like. And I don't think it's because I'm a prude. I think it's honestly because it felt kind of icky, which was Beckett Mariner showing up to the reception naked. And it did not feel in character for me. I feel like she would be more about calling out Ferengi misogynistic BS rather than using it as an excuse to get naked and, I don't know, unsettle her mother. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I after the fact, after I'd read it the first time, I looked at it in a different way. It felt like it was a blatant display of what the Ferengi used to do to their females, not allow them to have money, not allow them to have clothes, not allow them to really have any rights at all. And so she was there loud and proud. I did really appreciate all the strategic placements of
that
items.
That was impressive.
That was the funniest part of that. But again, I'm just like, okay, this is going on too long. And I don't think this should even be happening.
Yeah. And I mean, like I said, maybe I'm coming across as a prude, but like...
No. I don't think so.
It just didn't feel like something she'd do. And I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But I will say that first... panel with that very strategically placed wine glass. Very well done.
Honestly, the artwork in that whole sequence is just top notch. It's just funny as hell, even though it doesn't make sense that she's doing this.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of like, it would be funny if we did this. Let's just shoehorn this in here and make it work with this particular issue. It's kind of like they were just desperate to do something that they thought was so lower decks that they wanted to just put this in there. And honestly, I don't think her mother would have been as calm as she was.
I don't think so. Also, like, even the Ferengi don't do that anymore. Like, it was kind of like... they don't even do that anymore. Why? Okay.
Yeah. It wasn't great. The best part of it, again, was all the strategic placement of things. Especially when she was standing straight up in the frame.
Yes. Definitely.
And it just, like, there's this, and it was funny too, because there was this kind of like floral arrangement that was kind of shaped like a bush in front of her naughty bits at the bottom. And it just made me laugh. So, but again, it didn't belong there. It didn't need to be there. It didn't do anything for the story.
It's a funny sight gag, but yeah. Anyway. So how about you? So how about something you liked from this issue? Because I have a few more things.
Something I liked. I liked when Tendi finally catches on to the work smarter, not harder thing. and how she was just kind of like doing stuff. She's like got big eyes watching everybody around and going, I'm not doing anything over here. And what she's doing during that time is discovering what the Pooter Scoots can be used for and how lucrative that will be to the Ferengi to control that particular aspect of energy themselves, et cetera. And, of course, charge people an exorbitant rate for it, I'm sure. But I really enjoyed that. And she was so tired. That poor girl was so tired. But when she's just like... And then when she finally gets him to basically release her from her servitude, she also asks if they'll release the guy that she's with, whose name I can't remember at the moment. Mm-hmm. But he's funny. He is funny in the background because he'll just be doing stuff in the background.
Yeah, I was going to say, I like that. He and Tendi were kind of both doing that while they were pretending not to listen. And like she's going shuffle, 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 clackety, clack, clack. And he's going, I think it was mopple, mopple, mopple.
Yes, that's it. Mopple, mopple, mopple. and then when he decides to let him free, what does he say? Snappy, snappy with his broom, mop, whatever it is he's working with. Snappy, snappy, snappy.
Yeah. That mop, by the way, I love because the little dome on it is the same as like on the Ferengi control panels of the ships we've seen in Star Trek. And it's just like the artist on this saw those and was like, hey, that would work as like the top of a, like the head of a mop. I like that design. It's great.
Yeah, very good. I liked it too.
Yeah. I will say one thing we've both said is we miss kind of Ryan North's writing style and the little bits that he adds at the end. There's one here that I'm like, okay, the writer of this is a big Star Trek fan, and you can tell in certain areas when Tendi yells, "Not today, Ardra."
Yes.
Which I thought was great. And the writer did also point it out, though. They had a little asterisk and was like, "You're welcome, nerds," was the little box that he wrote. So it was like, it almost harkened back to those days of the little bits at the bottom of each page of Ryan North's stuff. So I appreciated that. More of that, please. That was fun.
Yes, more of that. A lot more of that, please.
Artwork-wise, I thought that was great. I mean, they captured the Lower Decks style. There's also a number of B plots going on, and they actually like call it out as B stories, which I thought was amusing. It was kind of funny. I will say I was really worried at the very start where they talked about how Ransom died when he realized there was reading involved in something, but it's okay because T'Ana gave up one of her lives to bring him back. And I was like, okay, this is maybe a little over the top for Lower Decks. But then they redeemed themselves at the end where they're like at the staff meeting and she's like, "Oh, he was just dehydrated. And like, I just told them the life thing. I know it's dumb, but they eat that stuff up," or something. I was like, okay, all right, fine. Yeah, you get away with it.
She did it for a laugh.
Yeah.
She did it for laughs.
So they got away with it a little bit there, I think, but.
Yeah, that whole thing was really weird. And I was just like, why is this here? But then at the end, you know, and with T'Ana giving up a life, I'm like, that's not how locations work.
No.
No. But Jack, does Jack know how locations work? I doubt it.
Yeah. I think they were just putting one over on the Lower Decks people. But I feel like they're smarter than that, though, too.
So. Agree.
Yeah. So. It was kind of people acting dumb for the sake of acting dumb. I did like the little peeks we got into some of the B plots, though. Like, I guess Miglimo got something that made him smarter, but then like later on, they're just like, "Miglimo's dumb again. Okay, cool."
Oh, little flowers for Algernon right there, except Miglimo's still alive.
Yes.
If no one has read Flowers for Algernon, you don't understand that, and I'm not going to explain it. So just go look it up on Wikipedia or something.
I also noticed that the device that has made Miglimo smarter appears to be a colander with wires sticking out of it attached to one of Scotty's engineering tools from the original series.
So. That big, big thing. Oh, my Lord, that thing is big.
Oh, so any final thoughts, I guess, on this issue?
Yeah, this I wasn't exactly looking forward to this issue because of the previous issue, because I just felt like this was pointless. This was a pointless story. It's not something that would actually ever happen, because Tendi wouldn't be so dumb as to think that she had to pay for Starfleet Academy. She just... Yeah. Wouldn't. She's the kind of person that would have researched everything. The idea that she would have gotten in debt to a Ferengi to go to Starfleet Academy is ridiculous and improbable and unbelievable. So this entire storyline just doesn't work for me in that regard, because the premise of it is flawed. There is no way that this character would have done that. Not even Boimler would have done that. I mean, nobody... Nobody would have done that. So it's not my favorite story, and it does have a few things that I did enjoy, but overall it was just kind of meh for me. I was just kind of like, let's get this story over with and move on to something else, because there's really no stakes here. There really isn't. You're manufacturing this situation that never would have happened in trying to make it, you know, full of tension and what are we going to do sort of thing. And it's, don't dumb down Lower Decks like that. Just don't do it. Don't do it. So I'm going to give this a great big Gormagander space toilet.
I like it. Yeah. Yeah, I feel a lot of how you felt about this. I think, it wasn't my favorite story for sure. The premise was kind of weak. I liked some of the gags. I mean, that's kind of fun. But ultimately, yeah, I wasn't buying into the story. I didn't think that, you know, Captain Freeman would let Tendi be worked to death by the Ferengi. But yeah, I'm glad Quag got his debt erased too. So, you know, it meant something for that guy. So that's good. I'm glad he's free and clear and not an indentured slave basically anymore. So I don't know. Kind of a big meh for me a little bit. I'm glad it's done. I'm curious to see where we go next, and judging by some covers for next month, something to do with the whales and with cetacean ops and all of that. So I'm looking forward to that. Curious to see what that's about. So I'll give this one really cute Spock in the motion picture doll that Tendi is sleeping with at the end. Yeah.
That was so cute.
That's pretty adorable.
So
it does end with next time in an all new issue of Star Trek Lower Decks, again with the whales. So, yeah.
Which is funny, because, it could also, it could refer to more than one set of whales. Because we've got Matt and Kamolu, and we've also got George and Gracie, or their progeny at this point. So, you know.
Yeah, I think there's a variant cover for next month's issue that kind of looks like the Star Trek 4 poster, and it's Matt and Kamolu, and one of them, I don't remember which one's which, one of them is wearing like Kirk's red jacket thing from that movie, and the other one's wearing Spock's thing, and it might even have like a headband.
I think so. Matt is the hornier one.
Okay.
I think Kamolu's the steady one, and I think Matt's the hornier one. I'll have to go back and watch the end of series 2 when they take all the hull plating off of the
right,
Cerritos.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll have to go back and watch that. I love that episode anyway. It's one of my favorite episodes of Star Trek.
That's
in,
a good
in
one.
General. It really, really is.
It was that first contact, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, that's a great episode for sure.
It is.
Well, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we will talk about issue number 1 of a brand new Star Trek miniseries.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
As always, Positively Trek is brought to you by its Patreon supporters, including Joyce Mirren, Brandy Jackala, Christina DeClercq-Zalagi, John Guppy, Out of Memory, Patrick Carlin, and Ricky Long. If you'd like to support the podcast, visit patreon.com/positivelytrek. You can join at any level and enjoy early access to episodes, ad-free episodes, episode shoutouts, executive producer credits, and more. Again, that's patreon.com/positivelytrek. Thank you so much to those of you supporting us. We truly do appreciate it. And now, back to the show. So, Star Trek Strange New Worlds, The Seeds of Salvation, number 1, written by Robbie Thompson with art by Travis Mercer. So, quick plot summary for this issue. Chapel is bored, basically, aboard the Enterprise. The Enterprise has been doing these mundane missions. She ends up speaking with a friend of hers named Jenner, who's stationed on the planet Poylent, and I don't know about any of these pronunciations. But she speaks with her about joining her on this assignment that she's doing to research below the ice on this planet that will have some implications for saving lives. It's a little unclear exactly, but it's a more important mission than the ones that she's been on lately. She's not going to divert the Enterprise there just for her own purposes. The Enterprise is going to that region already. But when the Enterprise arrives at this planet, they find that all communication has been lost with the scientific team. They send a landing party, which investigates, and they find no one on the outpost left except for D6, this robot who is apparently, in his own words, the research facility's scientific assistant, cook, masseuse, cobbler, and housekeeper. Makes them shoes and cleans up after them, I guess.
And he's a fraidy cat.
Yes, he is also, cowardly in his own words as well, for sure. So it turns out that the first team was sent below the ice in a submersible, and they lost contact with them. And so the rest of them followed in a second submersible to find them, and they're missing too now. So there's just one sub remaining, and the Enterprise team is going to take it to search for the missing scientist. And we see them at the very end go below the surface, and all you can see below them are tentacles reaching up. So some sort of Lovecraftian horror, perhaps, below the waves.
Yeah. It's basically the beginning of a horror movie.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's a lot of setup. Not a lot of, not a lot of meat of the story. Just a lot of kind of putting the pieces where they need to go.
Yep.
But I'll start us off with this. I liked this generally. I like the kind of tone that it's establishing. I like the atmosphere that it's generating a little bit. Like there's certain pages where there's like one full page, for example, where it shows them descending into the outpost and like the different people are at different levels and the conversation is kind of taking place. I really liked that kind of visual look at descending into the depths. And there's a bunch of little things in this that I think do a good job of setting that tone.
I agree. One of the panels I liked the most was when D6 shows up. You see the two red eyes. I'm like, oh, red eyes are never a good thing. Never. never. Oh, wait, it's just a cowardly robot. Okay.
He forgot to flip that little switch that Agamus does to turn them blue so they're like nice and yeah.
Yeah. Well, Agamus, he has a switch now, but before it was more like... Oh, there it is.
Exactly.
So, I actually was intrigued by this. I find it kind of funny and a little bit ironic that Chapel is bored. And I'm like, really? You're on the Enterprise and you're bored? I think that's a you problem, honey.
Mm-hmm.
Because mundane missions... Honestly, that is what Enterprise does the most. We just see the exciting ones.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is what starships are for. This is what Starfleet is for. It's to explore strange new worlds, seek out new life and civilizations, and go boldly go where no one's gone before. That's what they do. That isn't always exciting.
Yeah. The one thing, and this isn't the fault of the comic. This is more generally... I'm like, what happens to Chapel to make her never want to go on an away mission again or rarely and just stay in sickbay with McCoy for 5 years? Like, I don't, what happens to her that she's like, I do not want.
Maybe it's this. Maybe it's this story.
Could be.
So I question the wisdom. I mean, I don't think they could have done anything else, but I question the wisdom of, okay, one group disappeared. The group that went after the next group to disappear, that they wanted to rescue them, right? And they disappeared, and you're going to send out another one. Doing things the way that they've been done over and over again is the and expecting a different result is the definition of insanity. Don't do it. Mm-hmm. But they're doing it. They don't have a choice, really, I guess.
I guess, but like when I was reading this the first time and D6 is talking about what happened, I've had industrial type jobs in my life, and some of them require entry into confined spaces or to be aware of entry into confined spaces. And like, that's one of the first lessons they tell you. Like, it's happened in the past where several people have lost their lives because somebody went into a tank and collapsed. So somebody went after them and collapsed, and somebody went after them and collapsed. And like, there was loss of life of multiple people because that was what was done. And no, do not do that. Like, oh, a bunch of people piled into a sub and then we lost contact with them and they're stuck down there. Let's pile everybody else into the other sub and go after them. No. Yeah.
Let's get all the leads of the departments, basically. Yeah. Well, technically, Chapel isn't a lead because she's a nurse, not a doctor. But but yeah, I just thought that's a dumb idea. That's a really dumb idea. But Chapel is not thinking quite clearly. She wants some excitement. And so she's excited about this. But I'm like, okay, so you've got your second in command with Una. You've got Chapel. You've got Spock. You've got Ortegas. Is that right?
Yes.
Is it Ortegas? Yes. Now, these are four very important people on the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Chapel, more in sick bay, but they're very important people. And you're going to send them all off after these two ships that have already disappeared?
The one thing I will say is at least they have a starship up there backing them up. But like,
that is true.
I really wonder about the scientific group where the like all the rest of them just went. Like, with I guess they had D6 left behind, but what's he gonna do? Like, obviously nothing.
I feel like, I mean, this is kind of what it makes me feel like. Have you ever seen the movie version, the 80s version of The Thing?
No.
With Kurt Russell?
I haven't. I know. It's a big gap.
It's brilliant. It is brilliant. It is the only movie that I can think of that makes me laugh until I scream and vice versa. It's just, there are things in that where you're just like, nope. Absolutely not. What the hell is that? No. 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 And I feel like this might be that kind of situation because the thing was found underneath the ice and they go to this place, this other camp, because they're, you know, in Antarctica. They go to this other camp where it seems to have all started and they find everything just either burned out, broken, or everybody's frozen over. And then they see someone who was in the process of transforming into something else. And it's just so much. There's a lot of, I guess it, you would call it body horror. Because this is a thing that takes your visage and molds itself into what you look like. So it can become an exact replica, but it has to have a bit of you in order to do that. It can't just, you know, look at you and just start changing.
Almost like a skinwalker or something like that.
Yeah, kind of like that, but much more disgusting. Yeah, like so gross, so gross. Honestly, please watch it. It especially for the time in which it was made. It's all practical effects, and you're just like, wow, because there's just, it still stands the test of time, in my opinion, you know, like 40 odd years later, more than 40 years later, that of just one of the grossest, but also most interesting, because it brings that thing of, is everyone who they actually are? And how do you know?
Yeah.
Are you sitting on the couch right now with the thing?
Blech.
You know, you don't know. So it's one of those, and the isolation of it all too. And this is making me feel that way. Stuff underneath the ice and you're isolated. There's no communication. And it's just like, I like the scariness of that.
Yeah.
That's working for me. Even if I feel like it's a dumb idea to take that third ship out.
Yeah, I'm curious to see the Strange New Worlds comic take on horror, because I feel like that's what they're going for here, is a really horror vibe for sure.
Good.
Also, just, you know, before we get corrected by people listening, I was wrong. The landing party is Spock, La'an, Scotty, Chapel and number one. So
still also all very important people.
Yeah. I was mixed up because Ortegas was in the first away mission when they were right in the desert at the beginning. What do you think of the artwork of this?
I think it's a little too cartoony for me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you were to take away the uniforms and just put these people's faces on a page, I don't know that I would be able to tell you, except for Spock with the pointy ears, that these are those people per se.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of style, and I don't hate it, but I also don't love it.
Yeah, I recognize the stylistic choices. It's almost a little bit manga, but not quite. I noticed there's a couple times like where a couple characters turn around and they have like the lines coming off their heads, like they've been surprised by something that you tend to see more in manga and anime. So I think they're kind of trying to lean in that direction, and it took some getting used to for me. Like the first couple pages, I really didn't like it at all. But by the end, I'm kind of like, okay, I'm kind of digging it a bit. And then, yeah, the stylistic choices, like as far as the layouts and stuff, I'm kind of appreciating some of the more different ways they're telling the story that way. So I don't know. We'll see.
I don't think I'm used to it yet. This just looks like another Vulcan. It's only because he's in a Spock's uniform that we know he's Spock in this regard. But this is just a me thing. It's not something that I will push onto other people. It's just what I experienced in regards to this artwork. And I'm not saying that the artwork was bad. It's not.
Oh yeah, no,
bad.
For sure.
And in fact, the that scene of them going down the stairs.
I love that.
Towards the end of it. It's just, that's so good. It's beautifully done. Mm-hmm. And the colors, which are not very colorful because of what story they're telling here, it's a lot of grays, a lot of shadows, etc., but it fits perfectly with the narrative that they're creating. So I didn't have a problem with that. And I'll get used to this particular style of the characters being drawn. So, you know, I'm not going to fault them on that. It just didn't work for me at first, and I'll get used to it.
One thing I will say, though, with regards to the characters, I liked how they were written. I thought the writer really captured their voices well. I think, and they made sure to do that from page one. Because, well, page two, I guess, is where I noticed it, where they were walking across the desert and like all of their voices sounded exactly right. Like Ortegas had some quippy things, like they just peppered it with stuff, I think, to make the reader go like, okay, yeah, they know these characters. I'm on board.
Yeah, that's clear. Their dialogue makes it clear that the writers know what they're doing as far as these characters. They know these characters. They know how to write these characters so that we'll recognize them.
Mm-hmm. I did love the kind of recurring joke for a little while where Spock kept correcting people when they were saying, an alien microbe or something. It's like, it was not a microbe. It was actually a unique multicellular, and they keep like cutting them off. Like, yeah, we know. I enjoyed that. I thought that was cute.
Yeah, we finally did get the whole thing.
Yeah.
Towards the end.
It was a fungus, apparently.
Yeah. Which microcellular fungus. That doesn't sound like a good thing. That sounds like something that'll take over your body and control it. Oh my God, The Last of Us is true.
Yep. I was going to say, too much The Last of Us, Brandy. I guess final thoughts on this. It's got me, it's hooked me a bit. Like, I'm really curious what's going to happen next. And that's what a good first issue should do, I think. So, yeah, of the two that we talked about this month, this one's the clear winner for me.
Agree completely.
Rating. Okay, I'm going to give it one ominous tentacle reaching up for the submarine at the end.
And I am going to give it two scary red eyes coming out of the darkness.
And an arm reaching out of the blackness, yes, too. That was too. Great.
Just like, no, not red eyes.
Awesome. Well, there we go. Those are our two issues for this month. So a light month for sure. But next month we are making up for that because we have four new issues to talk about. So first off, on September 3rd, we have two issues coming out that day. Red Shirts number 2, which I'm very excited about. I loved that first issue.
Agree.
Yeah. And then that same day, we have Star Trek Voyager Homecoming number 1 coming out as well. A new Voyager miniseries. Ooh, there's the right way, the wrong way, and there's the Janeway. I love it. I love it. If you guys are not watching on YouTube, you're missing out on Brandy's shirt game here. That was very nice.
I just thought, oh, I'll wear a Janeway shirt. And then I remembered after I put it on, oh, yeah, there's that new Voyager miniseries starting.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, this is perfect.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll be talking about that at the end of next month, along with also there's two more on top of those two. Star Trek Lower Decks number 11. So kicking off a new story, thankfully. Mm-hmm. And another one that I'm really excited about, Star Trek The Last Starship number 1. That one's coming out right at the end of the month on September 24th. That one is, it takes place during the burn, as spoken about in Star Trek Discovery, and involves a resurrected James T. Kirk. So that one's written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, who did the Star Trek flagship series that we talked about for the last while, that started in 2022 and just recently wrapped up. So I'm really excited about that one. I cannot wait.
Mm-hmm. Me too. I love anything that gets into the Discovery era because it's ripe for mining. Mm-hmm. You know, that whole time period is just, there's so much possibility there. And I'm glad that they're going to start using that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's a little preview of what we've got going on next month. Brandy, you've got a couple other podcasts that you're regularly doing. Why don't you tell us what's coming up in the next little while on Shield Podulation and Boldly Go?
Shield Podulation and Boldly Go. Yes, Shield Podulation. We finally are getting our very first Discovery episode. We do it randomly, by the way. We hit it lucky because we got an episode of Strange New Worlds, and then we got an episode of Discovery. Terra Firma Part 2, that's it.
Oh, interesting. It's
Terra Firma Part 2. And yes, we do not do two-parters together. We do them as individual episodes because we decided that beforehand. We had to go through a lot of things, but what if, but what if, but what if. And so we have situation control for every one of those things. And so that'll be coming out this coming, well, at the time that this comes out, no, it won't be out. It'll be out before this episode. I'm very excited to finally have a Discovery episode. The only one I think now that we haven't had an episode from is TOS. We've had TAS. Right, yeah. We've had one TAS episode, but not TOS. Mm-hmm. And we've had episodes from every other series.
Including Short Treks. You got one of your random thing got one of the, like, is it 8 Short Treks? Something like that. I can't remember how many there are, but like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ephraim and the Dot, that was the one that we covered.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boldly Go will be, of course, covering Star Trek Strange New Worlds episode 8.
Are we on 8? 4.5 Vulcans?
Yes. We'll actually be covering the one before that. We'll be covering episode 7
this week.
And then, what is Starfleet? And then next week, well, the week after. Yeah. Just go with it. It's fine. The stuff that happened last week and it set us behind and we're trying to catch up. So our episodes usually come out on Tuesdays, but they aren't very much coming out on Tuesdays at the moment. It'll get back to normal I promise you. But yeah, you can find both of those on your podcaster, podcatcher of choice. Wow, I can't talk anymore. I'm just going to stop.
It's all good. Yeah, and you can also join me and Brandy in the Unready Room every Saturday after new episodes air. Wow, only three of those left now for this season. It's gone so quickly, so eek. But we'd love for you to join us.
Yes, please do. We have so much fun. And you don't have to be there live. You know, you can watch it afterwards on YouTube.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us this month. We will see you again in 30 days at the end of September for the next four issues of comics. That might be a bit of a longer episode than this one, but we'll see how it goes. Until then, as always, stay positive. Positively Trek is produced and edited by me, Dan Gunther, and co-produced by Barry DeFord on Treaty 8 territory, the home of the Beaver, Cree, Dene, and Métis people, whose histories, languages, and cultures we respect. We acknowledge the many First Nations, Métis, and Inuit who have lived in and cared for these lands for generations.
KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.